overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us today one of my favorite guests, and I hope he's yours as well, Craig Wynn. And of course, he has a wonderful book. It's called The Prophet of Doom, and we've got a four-tape set of interviews with Craig called Islam, the Religion of Doom. And of course, he has written extensively, what is the Muslim faith? And I'll tell you, his book on the Prophet of Doom has about 200 pages of appendix there. Well, he will simply take a subject like Satanism or devils or and shows really the every phrase that is associated that you would want to know about how the Muslim faith feels about it. And you will find, of course, that Muhammad really felt that he was demonically possessed. Craig, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's my pleasure to be back. You're one of my very favorite people. I thank God for you.
Well, thank you so very much. Anyway, of course, I saw where I think there was somebody over in Ireland who had put out a video about the suppression of Islamic women, and they just shot him down in someplace in Europe. Anyway, did you see that article?
Yes. You know, back out of Europe now, I'm getting about 500 death threats and hate letters a week. So Europe is definitely the ground zero for the Islamic Jihad movement worldwide. What's so interesting, of course, on that particular subject is that not only is reality obvious, in the 52 Islamic countries, women universally have no rights. They're treated worse than domesticated animals. And that's because Muhammad said in his farewell sermon that men can beat their husbands, they can starve their husbands to death if they
want. You mean they can beat their wives and starve them?
Yes.
Okay.
Muhammad said that a Muslim can beat their wife, that they can starve them to death, that they can lock them in a closet. And he said that women exist for men to use their bodies, and that a woman is no different than a domesticated animal.
Why would any woman embrace this sort of a religion?
Well, I think it's twofold. One is they have no choice. That's what Islam means. It means submission. In an Islamic country, not to be a Muslim is to be dead. The Quran says that if any Muslim rejects their faith, kill them. So, according to Islam, you are born a Muslim. And therefore, if you leave Islam, good Muslim jihadists have been ordered to kill you. And they're not even supposed to kill you nicely, if there is such a thing. The 33rd surah says that these former Muslims, hypocrites, have to be killed viciously and so savagely that it would be a warning to all.
And I think really the advantage that you have in listening to Craig is he's read not only the Quran but the Sharia and the three or four other major books that were written within a couple of hundred years of Muhammad's death.
Yeah, there's only one book actually written within 200 years of his death, and that is called the Sirah, or biography, and I do know quite a little bit about it. And then there's three others that came between 200 and 300 years after his death. One's called the History, and the other two are topical hadith collections. And they enable you to do to the Quran, which Muslims do not want done, to put the Quran in chronological order and to provide it with the context of Muhammad's life.
And, of course, the beautiful thing about Craig's book is, as it goes through, it's not only the chronology of Muhammad, but then if you want to reference, if you want to know what he said, this or that or the other thing, what the Muhammadan faith really believes, you don't get lost in the details. You go to the appendix, it's right there. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Craig Wynn, who has written the book Prophet of Doom. And we actually have a four-tape set of four interviews that I've done with him. And it's called Islam, the Religion of Doom. And you really must understand that when the president tells us that we all worship the same God, Muslims worship the same God as Christians, the same God as Jews, Why, I think he's just very, very poorly informed. How would you respond to that, Craig? You've certainly studied this thing extensively. Your book, Prophet of Doom, covers what is said in the Quran and the Shura and in the other three or four major books upon which the Mohammedan faith is based. When the president says we all worship the same God, what God is he talking about?
Well, he's absolutely lying. First of all, he's not that stupid. And he claims to have read the Quran, so he can't plead ignorance. And he sent 200,000 American boys into harm's way to fight against those who are killing us in the name of this God. So he really cannot plead ignorance in this matter. Allah, as Allah is presented in the Quran, first is a figment of Muhammad's imagination. Muhammad did claim to be demon-possessed. It's obvious when you read their scriptures that he was demon-possessed, and therefore, when Muhammad created Allah in his own image, he created him in the image of Satan. Matter of fact, Satan's name, Halal, which is the name that that Isaiah ascribes to him. Isaiah is the only prophet actually to name Satan. Satan is not the devil's name. It's his title. It means the adversary. And Halal is his name. In fact, I did a very extensive survey of all of the words related to Halal and to Allah in the Hebrew Bible to understand whether or not the Bible speaks of this particular false god. And what you find is that the root of Allah in the Hebrew text is the accuser, the accursed. It's literally synonymous with Satan, and his manifestations are identical to the devils. But beyond that, you're just reading the Quran. If you were to read for 15 minutes, you would immediately come to the conclusion that Allah is only depicted spending time in hell. He personally revels, calls it entertainment, to spend time one-on-one with Christians and Jews, tormenting them in hell. And the most repetitive theme in the Quran, repeated 1,000 times in 114 surahs, is demons, hell, and punishment. So it is the fixation of this spirit to torment man. In the scriptures, in the Bible...
Hold that thought just a moment when we bring our other stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Craig Wynn, and he was just saying that, of course, there are many, many references to Satan, to hell, and in the Bible. In fact, one of the things that motivates the Muslim is he's never sure he's not going to hell. There's a terrible fear because this is such a frightening place, and, of course, the only way he can really be sure he's going to go to heaven would, of course, to die in jihad. Otherwise, he is never sure that he's been good enough to justify going to heaven. But pick up the story there.
Well, there's only one guarantee of going to the Islamic paradise. And by the way, the Islamic paradise is described as the kind of place that would send one to hell in Yahweh's Bible. The Islamic paradise is rivers that flow with wine and multiple virgins that satiate the carnal desires of jihadists. And that is the only guarantee of getting into paradise. So you're correct. A Muslim has no clue. But fear is also the operable word, the most repeated word in the Quran as it relates to Allah is to fear him. And he is a fearsome spirit. In fact, in Muhammad's first sermon, I told you about what he said in his last, in his first sermon, he uses in 13 sentences the word fear 13 times. It is the great commandment in Islam, or the great commandment in the Judeo-Christian scriptures is to love thy Lord thy God with all thy heart. In Islam, it is to fear Allah. So it is a religion based upon fear, and it is a religion based upon submission to a very, very dark spirit, a spirit modeled after Satan.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now you've been doing some sort of a treatise now, trying to put this all together into, as you see, this whole conflict coming down the line, the conflict between the Muslim world and the West, and you certainly put this into a biblical as well as a geopolitical framework, don't you?
Yeah, in fact, what I did originally, of course, is the first book on Islam was an expose on my voyage of discovery. It actually chronicles my meetings with Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, where I asked them, eyeball the gun barrel, why are you killing us? And it provides a very clear definition of who the terrorists are, why they kill, and what we can do to stop them. The second book is the one that you've been talking about, called Prophet of Doom, where I take Islam's five original books, put them in chronological order, put them in context of Muhammad's life, and I provide the most comprehensive and best documented presentation of the Islamic scriptures, where you learn that Muhammad was a terrorist and a pedophile and a rapist and a slave trader. He was easily the most evil man who ever lived, and that Islam is a satanic cult, a pure fraud at its heart. And I'll say that callously. The Prophet of Doom proves that using only the Islamic scriptures and reason 1,000 times over. Most recently, I've returned to the Bible, which I call the scriptures because that is what Yahweh calls them. Yahweh is the name of the God who inspired the Bible. He used his own name 7,000 times in his scriptures, so he ought to know what his name is. And in doing that, one of the things that I came across, now that I've come to understand Islam, is that this dark spirit of Allah and Islam permeates the scriptures. It's all over the place, beginning in the book of Genesis and running all the way through Revelation. You see the fingerprints of Islam, and it's a very dark portrait. I'd be glad to share with your listeners, Dr. Stan, some of the things that I found in the Bible pertaining to Islam.
Well, that's why I asked you to be on, so let's go ahead. We've covered much of this in your four tape sets. We have the other things. So what have you found about Islam in the Bible?
Well, it begins right at the beginning with Ishmael. For the listeners that don't know, Muhammad claims to be a direct descendant of Ishmael. He gets all of his biblical credibility as a prophet, being a derivative descendant of Ishmael. Muslims, Arabs, all think that they're descendants of Ishmael and therefore included in the covenant. So let's begin with what the Bible says about Ishmael. Turning to Genesis 16th chapter, we read, "The messenger of Yahweh said to Hagar, the expectant mother of Ishmael, 'Your descendants will be too many to count.'" Boy, that's today. That's true today with Muslims. "Behold, you will bear a son, and you will call his name Ishmael, because Yahweh is aware of your affliction. He will be a wild ass of a man, and his hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him, and he will live in hostility to the east of his brothers." Well, that's about as perfect a prediction of what Ishmael would rot and what Islam has brought as any that I can think. It goes on to talk about how Islam's patriarch Ishmael was sent out of the promised land and then into the desert south and east of Israel. And that's about all we hear about Ishmael until the bad boy of the Bible, Esau, the only person who God calls out by name that he says he hates, marries Ishmael's daughter. So let's pick up the story with Esau, who is the father of today's Jordanians, all Muslims, of course, and the Arabians. Esau is Isaac's son and Jacob's brother. Jacob is the man for whom Jews and Israel would be named. When the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, but Jacob was a peaceful man, we're told in Genesis 25:27. Conflict is already now brewing. So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing of, and Esau said to himself, "I will kill my brother Jacob," which means I will kill the Jews. And they have. Muhammad said, "Kill every Jew." So now Esau went to Ishmael. This is now in Genesis 28. So now Esau went to Ishmael and married, besides the wives he had, Mahalah, the daughter of Ishmael. Can you imagine? The daughter of Ishmael has Allah in her name. So we now move from Genesis to pick up the story of Esau in the last book of the Old Covenant Scriptures. In Malachi 1:3, Yahweh says, "I love Jacob," who is Israel, the Jews, "but I hate Esau." Hate Esau. "I have made his mountains," which is synonymous with nations, "a desolation, and appointed his inheritance with the jackals," which is synonymous with demons, which means he'll end up in hell, "and the wilderness, the place of desolation or hell." Though the descendants of Esau complain, "We have been beaten down, but we shall return to Israel to build upon the ruins." But Yahweh says, "They may build," which they have, they built the Dome of the Rock, "but I will tear down, and all mankind will call them the wicked territory, and the people toward whom Yahweh is indignant forever.
Now, whereabouts is that, Craig?
That is in Malachi, beginning 1:3.
Malachi 1:3.
So Yahweh has said he hates Esau, which is representative of today's Muslims in Jordan and in the northern part of Arabia. He says that they'll build a temple in Jerusalem, but that Yahweh will destroy them. And he says that I will remain indignant to these people forever.
Well, of course, that's a great temple was built in the late 600s. That's really one of the most beautiful structures in the world, and it sits there on the top of Temple Mount, and of course is a barrier to the rebuilding of the Temple of Solomon, which of course the Jews have always wanted to rebuild so they could resume their sacrifices.
The dome, yes, correct. The Dome of the Rock is actually a testament to Islam's deceit. Muhammad claimed, following the Satanic Verses, in the Satanic Verses, Muhammad claimed that he spoke Quran verses on behalf of Satan. And then he said that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan, which is true, because Allah and Satan are one and the same.
The average Muslim has no idea what this is really about, does he?
No, the average Muslim is just plain old indoctrinated and deceived. But unfortunately, most Muslims are good Muslims, which means they know that jihad is holy war against non-Muslims. They know that they have been ordered to kill all non-Muslims. And they know that their religion requires them to continue to war with all countries until the only government and the only religion on the planet is Islamic.
And isn't this really what many of the mullahs, many of the so-called clerics, Muslim clerics, are actually preaching in mosques all over the Middle East and right here in the United States?
When you talk about imams now, it's 100% of them preach fundamental Islam. Fundamental Islam is that all Muslims must fight jihad, and that they must kill all non-Muslims, and they must continue to war until the only religion and the only political doctrine on earth is Islam.
Now, that is, of course, why they wanted to kill Salman Rushdie. That's why they killed this fellow over in Ireland.
They wanted to kill Salman Rushdie for a different reason. Salman Rushdie, they wanted to kill because Salman Rushdie had the courage and the wisdom to expose Islam, to expose Muhammad as being demon-possessed on speaking on behalf of Satan. The fact is, he did those very things. So the Ayatollah knew that the one thing that was lethal to his power was for Islam to be exposed. The reason that Muslims write me so many hate letters and so many death threats is because Prophet of Doom does even a more thorough job, a vastly more thorough job, of exposing Islam than did Salman Rushdie's Satanic Verses. And that is the one thing the lie can never withstand is the truth. And that's why they attacked Salman Rushdie. His writings, the Satanic Verses, were lethal to Islam because the Satanic Verses are a very real part of Muhammad's existence.
And
he did precisely those things.
And this is what the average American has no idea, that this religion is basically a satanic religion, even though the average Muslim doesn't understand. The people who are pushing this throughout the world really do understand that, and certainly the Ayatollahs understand that over in Iran.
That is correct.
And the Ayatollahs, of course, in Iraq as well.
That is absolutely true. Now, as we progress through the Bible, the next thing we find is that there are about 10 words in the Bible that are virtually identical to Allah. And it's interesting to see what those words mean. I hear the music, so we'll take this up after the break.
We'll take this up after the break. Now, is there a relationship? Is Allah the moon god?
Yes. Allah was the moon god of Mecca. He was modeled after Sin, which was the moon god of Ur of the Chaldeans.
And that is, of course, why we see the crescent moon on all of the Arabic flags. And of course, why is the moon there? Allah was the moon god. Certainly not the god that the Christian or the Jew worship. We'll be right back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Now, most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago. And it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor
Carol Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor. You understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule, just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Craig Wynn. His book, Prophet of Doom, which we carry, and then our four-tape set of four interviews with Craig, will give you a complete overview of the Muslim religion based upon their writings, the things that you're not going to get elsewhere, because Craig's book is 1,000 pages. Now, 200 pages of that is simply an appendix, and it's great because you don't have to go through the whole book to find out where you learn about Satanism or demon possession. Why, it's all right there in the appendix, and you just go through the appendix and find out where all these references are in the Muslim holy books. Now, but then, of course, four-tape set gives you the overview as well. But right now we're talking about the work that Craig is doing at the present time, as he is actually writing another book, going into, of course, to how this ties into biblical prophecy. So pick up the story there, Craig.
Sure. Actually, the book is on the lessons of prophecy. I've taken virtually every prophecy in the Bible, and I've amplified it from the original Greek and Hebrew to demonstrate that every time Yahweh gives a prophecy, the principal reason is not just to tell us what will happen in the future, but to teach us a lesson. And so all of the prophecies in the Bible have attached to them spiritual lessons that will help us understand God's nature and his plan for our lives, as well as help us understand what's around the bend in the river. One of the things I just had shared is that is that words very similar to Allah, A-L-A-H, permeate the Old Testament, never as a name, but as a description. The most interesting is apostrophe A-L-A-H, which means the accursed, which is a perfect name for the devil. Now, as I said, that the only time that Satan is actually named in the Bible is in Isaiah 14, and what's interesting is he's named in a passage that ties him directly to Islam. The passage occurs in Isaiah 14. Isaiah is in the middle of presenting the Magog War, the all-Islamic war against Israel, World War III. And he begins by saying, the rule of the oppressor, the one who uses tyranny to harass, tax, and oppose, i.e. Islam, will come to an end. Those who smite, strike, exile, murder, punish, and slaughter the Jews in rage and anger with unceasing blows. Pretty hard to miss that being Muslims. And in fury, terrorize the nations with relentless aggression, will be prosecuted. Hell itself will be moved for them. The pompous, gloating leaders, arrogantly swelling with pride and boastful speech, will be brought from their graves like maggots spread out. How you have fallen! Cast out of heaven, O Halal, the one with the brightness of the morning star. The morning star is Shakar, which is interesting. It means morning star in Hebrew, which is, you know, the morning star is the sun. That's why all satanic religions have the sun as the principal god. Baal, the principal religion of the Old Testament times, Baal is the sun god. That's why he's represented by the bull, which is the sun is in the constellation of Taurus at the equinox. But in Arabic, Shakar, the same word that means sun, if you will, in Hebrew, means of the crescent moon. So in Halal of the sun is identical to Allah of the crescent moon. That verse goes on to says, you have been cast down to the earth and diminished. You use prostration, which is, of course, Islam's signature move, to weaken the Gentile nations. You boasted, I will ascend to heaven, I will exalt my throne above God, I will abide in the meeting place of the most sacred, Mount Moriah, that's where he will defame and create the abominations of abominations. That will be in the Dome of the Rock, right there on the top of Mount Moriah, Satan's most flamboyant shrine. It says, you said, I will make myself like the Most High, but you are brought down to the grave, to the depths of the pit. The offspring of the wicked will not rise up and inherit the land of Israel or rule over the earth. In other words, as much as Muslims throughout the world covet Israel and want to push the Jews into the seas, they will not prevail, is what Isaiah is saying here. It's also interesting to say that it was gloating, arrogance, that caused Halal to fall. And the most famous line in all of Islam is what every Islamic terrorist says before they kill, Allahu Akbar, which means Allah is greater. Greater than whom, do you think?
Greater than the God of the Bible.
Bingo! That's it. Greater than Yahweh. So he can't be Yahweh because he wants to be greater than Yahweh.
And, of course, the average Muslim doesn't understand that they're involved in the spiritual battle and they're on the wrong side. But then there are an awful lot of Christians who don't understand there's a spiritual battle going on either. And that is, I think, what's so important about Craig's work, that he dramatizes this very real spiritual battle between God and Satan that's being fought out today in the Middle East, throughout the world, and really right here in America today. We'll be back in just a moment with Craig Wynn, and we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I just want to remind you that we carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, and the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum is a very convenient means of homeschooling your children from grammar school to high school graduation. It's on 22 CDs, and the textbooks are there, for science and really for everything. All the textbooks are on those CDs except for the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, which you have to buy. Pardon me, you have to get the Saxon math textbooks. You can have to buy those through Dr. Robinson's ministry. But you'll actually have the tests, and you'll have the answers to the tests. And it takes very little time for the parent with the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. It was set out specifically in that way because Dr. Robinson and his wife set this up. They were both scientists. They left the University of Southern California, moved to Oregon. They had six children. And then, of course, Dr. Robinson's wife died, and he had to raise those children. And he used this system, and it worked so well that they've made it available to others. That's the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, $199.95 at the entire curriculum. All you have to buy is the Saxon Math textbooks. I want to remind you, we also carry the Sanjian radios, shortwave radios that comes with a 25-foot antenna, a wind-up antenna that you can take out or put back in. But it's an excellent product. Sanjian's been making shortwave radios for a long time, and certainly they made them for years for Radio Shack, the others. I don't think they make them for them now, but their products are good. They're dependable. This is a digital radio, and, of course, it's got FM, AM, all of it. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Craig Wynn. We're talking about the Muslim religion, and what he's finding as he begins going through the Old Testament in Greek and Hebrew, and the frequent references to Allah, or the various names that he has there, that God has the name for Allah, and of course for the descendants of Esau. So pick up the story from there, Craig.
Sure. So we're not misleading. Allah is never provided as a name in the Hebrew Bible, but the root of Allah's name, lowercase A-L-A-H and Halal, are throughout the scripture, and the root meaning of the name in Hebrew is hellacious. It is the accuser. It is the cursed. It is the one who utters blasphemy in the name of God. So it is a horrendous root. And as you, I'm sure, know, Dr. Stan, all Hebrew names were based on a word that has meaning. For example, Yahweh's name is based on Haya, which means I am or I exist. All the names have significance. Yeshua, for example, which is really the name of who we call Jesus. Yeshua means Yahweh saves, or Yahweh is salvation. So all the names are significant. Paul, in the second of his letters to the Corinthians, in the 11th chapter, says this of the religion that Muhammad claimed. Now, this would be 700 years later. That Muhammad claimed 7 centuries later was given to him by the angel Gabriel. So Paul said, I am concerned that just as Eve was deceived and beguiled by the serpent's cunning, that would be Satan's cunning, your minds may someday be corrupted. For if someone comes and preaches another Yeshua, Jesus, the Quran incidentally calls Jesus Esau, E-S-A-U, which is the bad boy. So the name they apply to Jesus is the one person Yahweh says he hates. I don't think that's a coincidence. So if someone preaches a Yeshua who is different, and Of course, the Quran's version of Yeshua, of Jesus, is 180 degrees different than the one presented in the Gospels. If you receive a spirit from another God, read Allah, or hear a different gospel, Muhammad's surrender and jihad versus Yahweh's choose and love, you may be susceptible. I may not possess eloquent speech or be an apostle who requires your obedience. That's what Islam means, by the way, submission, obedience. But I know what is true, and I have manifested to you. The truth of Messiah is in me, and I will continue doing this in order to cut the ground underneath those who would seize the opportunity to boast about, for such men are false prophets, deceitful teachers, masquerading as messengers of God, the title Muhammad bequeathed on himself, and no wonder, for Satan transfigures and disguises himself as an angel of light. In other words, Halal pretended to be Gabriel and beguiled Muhammad, and Islam is the result. We move forward. What we find is that throughout the scriptures, there are literally hundreds of prophecies that speak about Islam's influence in the last days, and it's all based upon terror and violence and deceit and deception. But the climax of the first war in the tribulation, in fact, the very event that begins the tribulation, is linked to prophecies in Daniel and Ezekiel. In Daniel 9, we read that the prince of the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the temple and the sanctuary, and that we're told that those people will be the people that will ultimately be the nations from which the Antichrist will come.
Well, now, of course, that was the Romans, though.
But very misleading for almost all Bible scholars who say, therefore, the Antichrist must come out of Europe. Wrong. And reason that is wrong is Titus, in 70 A.D., fulfilled that prophecy that was made in the 6th century B.C., that Daniel made. And when Titus came to Jerusalem, he was leading two legions. Both legions were comprised in their entirety out of fighters from the Eastern Roman Empire, which is today's places like Turkey, for example, and going all the way down through Persian empires. So it's the Eastern Roman Empire, not the Western Roman Empire.
Isn't that interesting?
Now, if we go back a chapter and read in the 8th chapter of Daniel, he tells us precisely where this Antichrist is going to come from, and something that's confirmed so many other places in Scripture. He says that starting in the 20th verse, that the ram which you saw, he's talking about one of his prophecies, and the two horns are the kings of Media Persia, of course, Eastern Roman Empire, and the goat is the king of Greece. Alexander is who he's talking about here, who he predicted would be this great conqueror. And then he said that Alexander's kingdom, it says right here, will be broken into four horns, which is precisely what happened. But it's out of this kingdom, which would represent all of the Eastern Roman Empire, that the Antichrist will come, because it goes on to say that that whereas four stood up from it, from the kingdom that that Alexander conquered, which is precisely what happened, four kingdoms have come out of the nation, but not in Alexander's power. It doesn't say Alexander, but that's what it's saying here between the lines. And in the last days, this is our time, out of that kingdom, when the transgressions have come to the full, which is the tribulation, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences, in other words, very deceitful and malignant, shall rise up, and his power shall be mighty. Not by his own power, however, which is saying is he will be possessed by a satanic spirit. Lucifer, Halal, Satan himself does not possess the Antichrist, but his most effective demon does. It's probably the same demon that infected Muhammad and Adolf Hitler. And he shall destroy to an extraordinary degree, prospering by promoting his own will. And he shall destroy the mighty and the holy people, the set-apart people, which are the Jews. And through his beguiling nature, he shall cause deceit to succeed, and he shall magnify himself. And by falsely proclaiming peace, which is the core of Islam, is to falsely proclaim peace, he shall destroy many. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes. The word for prince here is the same word that Isaiah uses in the 9th chapter to designate the Messiah. So that means he will be against the Messiah, the Antichrist, and he shall be broken without human agency or power. In other words, Yahweh himself, through his human manifestation, Yeshua, is going to do him in. So here we learn who he is going to be, that he's going to rise to power by proclaiming peace, that he's going to be vicious in destroying many. Now, what's also interesting, in the 9th chapter, it says that the triggering event of all of this is going to be an affirmation of a treaty with Israel and many nations. Affirmation would indicate that it's probably going to be UN resolution, the 181-242, so that Israel is going to be, as Isaiah says in 17 and 18, bend at the waist. She's going to do what she's going to be talked into doing what George Bush wants, which is to have her surrender Samaria and Judea, as well as Gaza, which will make Israel about 7 miles wide at her most populous point between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem.
But what is there going to be a war before this occurs?
Now, no. What happens here now is immediately after this peace treaty, which is standard Islamic fare, they're going to say, we're going to trade. You give us land, we'll give you peace. And the Antichrist is going to broker this according to these scriptures in Daniel. Immediately after doing that, what Ezekiel says, we're going to endure the Gog from Magog war. Now, what the Gog from Magog war is presented in Ezekiel 38, principally. And what happens here is that that Gog is a leader. He is not a that's not a place. Magog is a place. He's the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, which are both Turkey. So we're dealing here again with the Eastern Roman Empire, all Islamic countries. And these people are collectively going to join in a union. Now, the scriptures are very clear as to which nations participate in this union. It's in many, many, many books of the Bible. In fact, I cover all of them. But it includes today's Iraq and Iran, which will act as a unified nation, which is precisely what our involvement in Iraq is doing today. It's going to become a Shiite theocracy when we leave. Are going to unify with places like Syria, Libya, Egypt, the Sudan, and collectively they and the southern Russian federations, the Chechens, for example, and the Turks, are all going to form a union under Gog, and collectively they're going to attack Israel. That is the first battle of the tribulation. It is World War III. It is an all-Islamic war. Every nation mentioned is Islamic. They all fight Israel. But what the scriptures say is that only a sixth part of them are going to remain at the end of that war.
In other words, there's going to be a great slaughter there.
What's going to happen is, according to the scripture, is twofold. One is that as these Muslims make their way into Israel, Yahweh will engage. He says that he will personally wipe out those who chose to destroy his holy city. And so he does precisely what he did in Sodom and Gomorrah, rains down fire and brimstone. As a matter of fact, you can go to the remnants of Sodom and Gomorrah today, and you will see the brimstone, the sulfur, everywhere. It's still combustible, by the way. To put a match to all these pellets of sulfur, they still combust. He's going to do that again. It's what he says. And a sixth part means, with a billion Muslims today, 1.2 billion Muslims today, you're going to have almost a billion Muslims are going to die. Now, what happens is because the Antichrist has moved his capital to Jerusalem, pretending, of course, to be Yahweh, he is going to be angered that these Muslims have attacked, and he is going to respond. The picture the scriptures paint is that of a nuclear and biological war. It says that one quarter of the earth's surface is scorched, and that the seas are destroyed, And ultimately, one quarter of the Earth's population dies in this war. So we're going to lose 1.5 billion people in World War III, all as a direct result of us being ignorant and tolerant of Islam, because this war is 100% Islamic.
Well, of course, they're going to be marching, though. They're going to be attacking Israel. And,
well, that's the reason.
Right.
Correct. Now,
where does America fit into this from your point of
view? Yeah, America, I believe America is specifically mentioned. Most Bible scholars say America is not specifically mentioned. I think she is mentioned in very specifically in Isaiah 17 and 18. I'll speak of that in a moment. And I think that the most vivid depiction of America as we know her today and the church as we know it today is actually in Hosea. In fact, I'm now about 30 pages into what will be about a 100-page review of Hosea, and its direct relationship to America and the church today, and what we why we are the center of God's wrath, and what's going to happen to us, and why. But Isaiah 17 and 18. Speak about a nation divided by rivers, known for its air and naval prowess, that is called an arrogant people, fair-skinned and tall people. To the far west of Israel, across the sea, and it says of these people that they will separate themselves from God, which is precisely what we're doing as Americans, and that we will loot Israel. What's interesting is America is the only nation to successfully loot Israel. That is what the Camp David Accords were all about, for example. Jimmy Carter forced Israel to give back the Sinai so that he could change Egypt's military hardware purchasing diet from Soviet to American, which is why he did it. And so we looted Israel in that regard. When Israel was attacked again in the Yom Kippur War, we were the nation that forced Israel to come back out of Syria and in Egypt, giving up the land again. When when they went north into Lebanon to protect themselves from the Islamic terrorists of Hezbollah, Allah's party, we're the nation that forced them back again. We constantly, as a nation, sell out Israel to appease the oil-rich Muslims. And so it says this nation will loot Israel, and as a result, before the harvest, which is the biblical term for rapture, it says that this nation shall have her largest cities destroyed, which is precisely what I wrote in Prophet of Doom, which in Tiwa Teres, because it became obvious. It says that our largest cities will be destroyed to the point where they will be uninhabitable. Muslims are going to deploy, not via ballistic missiles, but via sailing them into our harbors, fission bombs and thermonuclear devices, as well as radiological dispersion devices, in New York, Washington, Los Angeles, in our largest cities. And once that happens, America, in terms of a land of prosperity, a land of freedom, will cease to exist.
Well, I think whenever a nation such as ours turns against God, God eventually will turn against that nation. And all you need to do is look around and to really think that this is truly a nation under God any longer.
Well, we perhaps are a nation under God, because the actual God is derived from the Germanic word Gott, which is the name of the Teutonic dark spirit from which the SS, Hitler's occultist group, was based. Lord, the term that we love to use in America too, is a satanic term. Lord is the name of Baal, the satanic sun god of the biblical period. So we are definitely not a nation under Yahweh anymore. Most Americans do not even know the name of the God of the Bible.
Well, Craig, that's a fascinating, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing the book in its finished form. How soon do you think it'll be available?
Oh, I work on it 14 hours a day, and it's the greatest joy of my life. I want to tell you, doing amplifications where you get to see what the Scripture really says is like being a kid going to Disneyland. I am the happiest guy in the world doing this, but I think I've got months of work. But what I am doing is I am posting every chapter as I finish it on the web for people to read free. So you don't have to wait for it to be done.
How can they get to your website?
Prophetofdoom.net.
Prophetofdoom.net.
And it's under called The Future's History, and you'll see it right up there on the front page. click right to it, and you can read everything that's been written so far for free.
God bless you. Thanks very much, Craig. I hope we can get you back again sometime soon.
Be my pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this afternoon's program. I'm sorry we have Mike hanging on the line, but we're not going to get a chance. I didn't want to interrupt Craig. I wanted to hear what he had to say. Well, maybe sometime soon we can get your thoughts.
So listen.
Be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course I want to remind you that we do carry the Berkey, Big Berkey, and the Berkey Life water filters, and certainly these are the most efficient filters that we have, that I know of. What you do, of course, they're simply gravity filters. You put the water in the top, it comes out the bottom. Big Berkey is made out of stainless steel. The Berkey Light is made out of Lexan, so you can actually see the water level. But the advantage is, of course, that they are excellent water filters. They'll take out the bacteria and the cryptosporidium, and they'll take out many of the herbicides and pesticides. Now, you can get special post-filters for both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light that will actually take out the fluoride and the lead and the arsenic. Actually, the Berkey Light actually takes out MTB, and I believe it's the lead, but it doesn't take out fluoride or arsenic. You have to get the special post filters to do that. But the Big Berkey has been used for 100 years by missionaries throughout the world. Their time tried and proven, and certainly if you need a water filter, anything ever happened on an emergency basis, you'd want to have it. Then there are lots of people who want to get the chlorine out of their water, and they want to make sure that their water is really dependable. Time and again, there have been accidents where they've had cryptosporidium in the water, and large numbers of people have been infected, and then, of course, there could be a bacteriological attack, and they could contaminate the water supply. So it's a handy thing to have on hand. A lot of people use it rather than going out and buying regular bottled water. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and you can either get the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. If you buy them through us, of course, you'll get a free video or four-tape set we produced. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who out there in the listening audience who listen to our programs, who believe that we have something different and worthwhile to say for your help and your continued support. And so if you'd like to know more about Radio Liberty, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a copy of our October newsletter, which goes into the background of the secret society that was set up here in the United States in 1640 to take over control of this country and to lead America into this one-world government, into this new economic system, into this new currency, into the new religion, which is, of course, Satanism, Why? This is the October newsletter. We'll send it to you free of charge. And we base what we say not upon what I say, not what on some conservative or Christian says, but what on a Satanist has said. And the book we're quoting is written for Satanists. And Satanists throughout the world read this book, and they understand what's happening. And they laugh and they scoff at us foolish people who have no idea what's really going on. So we simply take the quotations from their book. Now, we do carry the book. It's called The Secret Destiny of America. It's written by Manly Palmer Hall, who is a 33rd degree Mason, who is one of the leaders of this world movement to bring about this world movement. And he was an avowed Satanist. So, and I know, for instance, our friend Bill Snevelin was actually trained in Satanism by Manly Palmer Hall. So read what Manly Palmer Hall says. That's The Secret Destiny of America. We have it in a special catalog. We want you to know that we do not approve of this material. It's for your research purposes. But we want you to be able to verify what we say. We don't want you to take what we say. We want you to go to the original source material and to understand that what is happening in America today, the destruction of the morality of our society, the pushing of a depravity, the popularization of homosexuality because there's a spiritual component to homosexuality, and nobody wants to talk about that. Certainly, so many of our ministers, they may be against homosexuality, but they will not go into the satanic part of this. You see, it's basically everything is 180 degrees opposite from God's plan. God has a plan for men and for women, and of course, homosexuality is the exact opposite. Satanism is the opposite. That's why they have a black mass. That's why they have taken and written a new Ten Commandments, and they have it in the Ark of Hope. And that was written, of course, by our good friend Mikhail Gorbachev. And on his board of directors, and if any of you doubt this, we'll be glad to send you the material we got from the State of the World Forum. Who do we find on the board of directors of Mikhail Gorbachev's State of the World Forum? George H. Bush, George Shultz, Ted Turner, and many of the leaders of the world. We actually get the material from the other side. And they have written a new Ten Commandments. They put it in the Ark of the Hope. You see, it's 180 degrees opposite. 180 degrees opposite from Christianity. So that's what we're involved in. There is a spiritual battle going on today, and most people don't understand that at all. You need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get, certainly, our material on Skull and Bones. We have a great deal of information on Skull and Bones. You need to get Craig Wynn's book, Prophet of Doom. And believe me, he's getting 500 death threats a week, and this is what he claims. And I certainly believe it. I believe only God is protecting him. You need to get the four-tape set, Islam, the Religion of Doom. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. I should mention we've had a couple of cancellations for the meeting this Saturday at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. If you're interested, give us a call. We'll see if we can still fit you in. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.